and waking brought him no comfort. Still, his sleep had not been without all healing virtue. He was stronger, more able to bear his burden one stage further. They didn't know the time, nor how long they'd slept, but after a morsel of food and a sip of water, they went on up the ravine until it ended in a sharp slope of screes and sliding stones. There the last living things gave up their struggle. The tops of the Morgai were grassless, bare, jagged, barren as a slate. After much wandering and search, they found a way that they could climb, and with a last 100 feet of clawing scramble, they were up. They came to a cleft between two dark crags, and passing through, found themselves on the very edge of the last fence of Mordor. Below them, at the bottom of a fall of some 1,500 feet, lay the inner plain, stretching away into a formless gloom beyond their sight. The wind of the world blew now from the west, and the great clouds were lifted high, floating away eastward, but still only a grey light came to the dreary fields of Gorgoroth. There smoke trailed on the ground and lurked in hollows, and fumes leaked from fissures in the earth. Still far away, 40 miles at least, they saw Mount Doom, its feet founded in ashen ruin, its huge cone rising to a great height, where its reeking head was swathed in cloud. Its fires were now dimmed, and it stood in smouldering slumber, as threatening and dangerous as a sleeping beast. Behind it there hung a vast shadow, ominous as a thundercloud. The vales of Barad-dûr that was reared far away upon a long spur of the ashen mountains, thrust down from the north. The dark power was deep in thought, and the eye turned inward, pondering tidings of doubt and danger. A bright sword, and a stern and kingly face it saw, and for a while it gave little thought to other things, and all its great stronghold, gate on gate, and tower on tower, was wrapped in a brooding gloom. Frodo and Sam gazed out in mingled loathing and wonder on this hateful land. Between them and the smoking mountain, and about it north and south, all seemed ruinous and dead, a desert burned and choked. They wondered how the lord of this realm maintained and fed his slaves and his armies. Yet armies he had, as far as their eyes could reach, along the skirts of the Morgai and away southward. There were camps, some of tents, some ordered like small towns. One of the largest of these was right below them. Barely a mile out into the plain, it clustered like some huge nest of insects, with straight, dreary streets of huts and long, low, drab buildings. About it the ground was busy with folk going to and fro. A wide road ran from its southeast to join the Morgul Way, and along it many lines of small, black shapes were hurrying. "I don't like the look of things at all," said Sam. "Pretty hopeless, I call it. Saving that where there's such a lot of folk, there must be wells or water, not to mention food. And these are men, not orcs, or my eyes are all wrong." Neither he nor Frodo knew anything of the great slave-worked fields away south in this wide realm, beyond the fumes of the mountain by the dark, sad waters of Lake Noornan, nor of the great roads that ran away east and south to tributary lands, from which the soldiers of the Tower brought long wagon trains of goods and booty and fresh slaves. Here in the northward regions were the mines and forges, and the musterings of long-planned war, and here the Dark Power, moving its armies like pieces on the board, was gathering them together. Its first moves, the first feelers of its strength, had been checked upon its western line, southward and northward. For the moment it withdrew them, and brought up new forces, massing them about Kirith Gorgor for an avenging stroke. And if it had also been its purpose to defend the mountain against all approach, it could scarcely have done more. "Well," Sam went on, "whatever they have to eat and drink, we can't get it. There's no way down that I can see, and we couldn't cross all that open country crawling with enemies, even if we did get down." "Still, we shall have to try," said Frodo. "It's no worse than I expected. I never hoped to get across. I can't see any hope of it now. But I've still got to do the best I can. At present, that's to avoid being captured as long as possible. So we must still go northwards, I think, and see what it's like where the open plain is narrower."
"I guess what it'll be like," said Sam. "Where it's narrower, the orcs and men will just be packed closer. You'll see, Mr. Frodo."
"I dare say I shall, if we ever get so far," said Frodo, and turned away. They soon found that it was impossible to make their way along the crest of the Morgai, or anywhere along its higher levels, pathless as they were and scored with deep gills. In the end, they were forced to go back down the ravine that they had climbed and seek for a way along the valley. It was rough going, for they dared not cross over to the path on the westward side. After a mile or more, they saw, huddled in a hollow at the cliff's foot, the orc hold that they had guessed was near at hand, a wall and a cluster of stone huts set about the dark mouth of a cave. There was no movement to be seen, but the hobbits crept by cautiously, keeping as much as they could to the thorn brakes that grew thickly at this point along both sides of the old watercourse. They went 2 or 3 miles further, and the orc hold was hidden from sight behind them. But they had hardly begun to breathe more freely again when harsh and loud they heard orc voices. Quickly they slunk out of sight behind a brown and stunted bush. The voices drew nearer. Presently, two orcs came into view. One was clad in ragged brown and was armed with a bow of horn. It was of a small breed, black-skinned, with wide and snuffling nostrils, evidently a tracker of some kind. The other was a big fighting orc, like those of Shagrat's company, bearing the token of the eye. He also had a bow at his back and carried a short, broad-headed spear. As usual, they were quarrelling, and being of different breeds, they used the common speech after their fashion. Hardly 20 paces from where the hobbits lurked, the small orc stopped.
"Nah," it snarled. "I'm going home."
It pointed across the valley to the orc hold.
"No good wearing my nose out on stones any more. There's not a trace left, I say. I've lost the scent through giving way to you. It went up into the hills, not along the valley, I tell you."
"Not much use, are you, you little snufflers," said the big orc. "I recognize a better than your snotty noses."
"Then what have you seen with them?" snarled the other. "Gone. You don't even know what you're looking for."
"Whose blame's that?" said the soldier. "Not mine. That comes from higher up. First they say it's a great elf in bright armour, then it's a sort of small dwarf man, then it must be a pack of rebel Uruk-hai, or maybe it's all the lot together."
"Ah," said the tracker. "They've lost their heads, that's what it is. And some of the bosses are going to lose their skins too, I guess, if what I hear is true. Tower raided and all, and hundreds of your lads done in, and prisoner got away. If that's the way you fighters go on, small wonder there's bad news from the battles."
"Who says there's bad news?" shouted the soldier.
"Ah, who says there isn't? That's cursed rebel talk, and I'll stick you if you don't shut it down, see?"
all right," said the tracker. "I'd say no more than go on thinking. But what's the black sneak got to do with it all? That gobbler with the flapping hands?"
"I don't know. Nothing, maybe. But he's up to no good, nosing around, I'll wager. Curse him. No sooner had he slipped us and run off than word came he's wanted alive, wanted quick."
"Well, I hope they get him and put him through it," growled the tracker. "He messed up the scent back there, pinching the cast-off mail shirt that he found and paddling all round the place before I could get there."
"It saved his life anyhow," said the soldier. "Why, before I knew he was wanted, I shot him as neat, at 50 paces, right in the back. But he ran on."
"Go on, you missed him," said the tracker.
first you shoot wild, then you run too slow, and then you send for the poor trackers. I've had enough of you.
He loped off.
You come back, shouted the soldier, or I'll report you.
You too, not your precious Shagrat. He won't be captain any more.
I'll give your name and number to the Nazgul, said the soldier, lowering his voice to a hiss. One of them's in charge at the tower now.
The other halted, and his voice was full of fear and rage.
You cursed peaching sneak thief,
he yelled.
You can't do your job, and you can't even stick by your own folk. Go to your filthy shriekers, and may they freeze the flesh off you. If the enemy doesn't get them first, they've done in number one, I've heard, and I hope it's true.
The big orc, spear in hand, leapt after him, but the tracker, springing behind a stone, put an arrow in his eye as he ran up, and he fell with a crash. The other ran off across the valley and disappeared. For a while the hobbit sat in silence. At length Sam stirred.
"Well, I call that neat as neat," he said. "If this nice friendliness would spread about in Mordor, half our trouble would be over."
"Quiet there, Sam," Frodo whispered. "There may be others about. We have evidently had a very narrow escape, and the hunt was hotter on our tracks than we guessed. But this is the spirit of Mordor, Sam, and it has spread to every corner of it. Orcs have always behaved like that, or so all tales say, when they're on their own. But you can't get much hope out of it. They hate us far more, altogether and all the time. If those two had seen us, they would have dropped all their quarrel until we were dead."
There was another long silence. Sam broke it again, but with a whisper this time.
"Did you hear what they said about that gobbler, Mr. Frodo? I told you Gollum wasn't dead yet, didn't I?"
"Yes, I remember. And I wondered how you knew," said Frodo.
"Well, come now.
I think we'd better not move out from here again until it's got quite dark. So you shall tell me how you know, and all about what happened, if you can do it quietly."
"I'll try," said Sam. "But when I think of that stinker, I get so hot I could shout."
There the hobbits sat under the cover of the thorny bush, while the drear light of Mordor faded slowly into a deep and starless night. And Sam spoke into Frodo's ear all that he could find words for, of Gollum's treacherous attack, the horror of Shelob, and his own adventures with the orcs. When it had finished, Frodo said nothing but took Sam's hand and pressed it. At length he stirred.
"Well, I suppose we must be going on again," he said.
"I wonder how long it will be before we really are caught and all the toiling and the slinking will be over and in vain." He stood up. "It's dark, and we can't use the lady's glass. Keep it safe for me, Sam. I've nowhere to keep it now, except in my hand, and I shall need both hands in the blind night. But Sting I give to you. I've got an orc blade, but I don't think it will be my part to strike any blow again." It was difficult and dangerous moving in the night in the pathless land, but slowly and with much stumbling the two hobbits toiled on hour by hour northward along the eastern edge of the stony valley. When a grey light crept back over the western heights, long after day had opened in the lands beyond, they went into hiding again and slept a little, turn by turn. In his times of waking, Sam was busy with thoughts of food. At last, when Frodo roused himself and spoke of eating and making ready for yet another effort, he asked the question that was troubling him most.
"Begging your pardon, Mr. Frodo," he said, "but have you any notion how far there is still to go?"
"No, not any clear notion, Sam," Frodo answered. "In Rivendell, before I set out, I was shown a map of Mordor that was made before the enemy came back here, but I only remember it vaguely. I remember clearest that there was a place in the north where the western range and the northern range send out spurs that nearly meet. That must be 20 leagues at least from the bridge back by the tower. It might be a good point at which to cross. But of course, if we get there, we shall be further than we were from the mountain, 60 miles from it, I should think. I guess that we have gone about 12 leagues north from the bridge now. Even if all goes well, I could hardly reach the mountain in a week. I'm afraid, Sam, that the burden will get very heavy, and I shall go still slower as we get nearer. Sam sighed. That's just as I feared, he said. Well, to say nothing of water, we've got to eat less, Mr. Frodo, or else move a bit quicker. At any rate, while we're still in this valley, one more bite and all the food's ended, save the elves' waybread. I'll try and be a bit quicker, Sam, said Frodo, drawing a deep breath. Come on, then. Let's start another march. It was not yet quite dark again. They plodded along, on into the night. The hours passed in a weary stumbling trudge with a few brief halts. At the first hint of grey light under the skirts of the canopy of shadow, they hid themselves again in a dark hollow under an overhanging stone. Slowly the light grew, until it was clearer than it yet had been. A strong wind from the west was now driving the fumes of Mordor from the upper airs. Before long the hobbits could make out the shape of the land for some miles about them. The trough between the mountains and the Morgai had steadily dwindled as it climbed upwards, and the inner ridge was now no more than a shelf in the steep faces of the Efel Duath. But to the east it fell as sheerly as ever down into Gorgoroth. Ahead the watercourse came to an end in broken steps of rock. For out from the main range there sprang a high barren spur, thrusting eastward like a wall. To meet it, there stretched out from the grey and misty northern range of arid Lithuay a long jutting arm, and between the ends there was a narrow gap, Carach Angren, the Eisenmouth, beyond which lay the deep dale of Udun. In that dale, behind the Morannon, were the tunnels and deep armouries that the servants of Mordor had made for the defence of the Black Gate of their land. And there now their lord was gathering in haste great forces to meet the onslaught of the captains of the West. Upon the outthrust spurs, forts and towers were built, and watchfires burned, and all across the gap an earth wall had been raised, and a deep trench delved that could be crossed only by a single bridge. A few miles north, high up in the angle where the western spur branched away from the main range, stood the old castle of Duathang, now one of the many orc holes that clustered about the gate of Udun. A road, already visible in the growing light, came winding down from it, until only a mile or two from where the hobbits lay, it turned east and ran along a shelf cut in the side of the spur, and so went down into the plain and on to the Eisenmouth. To the hobbits, as they looked out, it seemed that all their journey north had been useless. The plain to their right was dim and smoky, and they could see there neither camps nor troops moving, but all that region was under the vigilance of the forts of Carach Angren. "We've come to a dead end, Sam," said Frodo. "If we go on, we shall only come up to that Orc Tower, but the only road to take is that road that comes down from it. Unless we go back, we can't climb up westward or climb down eastward."
"Then we must take the road, Mr. Frodo," said Sam. "We must take it and chance our luck, if there's any luck in Mordor. We might as well give ourselves up as wander about any more, or try to go back. Our food won't last. We've got to make a dash for it."
"All right, Sam," said Frodo. "Lead me, as long as you've got any hope left. Mine's gone. But I can't dash, Sam. I'll just plod along after you."
"Before you start any more plodding, you need sleep and food, Mr. Frodo. Come and take what you can get of them."
He gave Frodo water and an additional wafer of the waybread, and he made a pillow of his cloak for his master's head. Frodo was too weary to debate the matter, and Sam didn't tell him that he'd drunk the last drop of their water and eaten Sam's share of the food as well as his own. When Frodo was asleep, Sam bent over him and listened to his breathing and scanned his face. It was lined and thin, and yet in sleep it looked content and unafraid.
"Well, here goes, master," Sam muttered to himself. "I'll have to leave you for a bit and trust to luck. Water we must have, or we'll get no further.
Sam crept out, and flitting from stone to stone with more than hobbit care, he went down to the watercourse, and then followed it for some way as it climbed north, until he came to the rock steps where, long ago, no doubt, its spring had come gushing down in a little waterfall. All now seemed dry and silent, but refusing to despair, Sam stooped and listened, and to his delight he caught the sound of trickling. Clambering a few steps up, he found a tiny stream of dark water that came out from the hillside and filled a little bare pool, from which again it spilled, and vanished then under the barren stones. Sam tasted the water, and it seemed good enough. Then he drank deeply, refilled the bottle, and turned to go back. At that moment he caught a glimpse of a black form or shadow flitting among the rocks away near Frodo's hiding place. Biting back a cry, he leapt down from the spring and ran, jumping from stone to stone. It was a wary creature, difficult to see, but Sam had little doubt about it. He longed to get his hands on its neck, but it heard him coming and slipped quickly away. Sam thought he saw a last fleeting glimpse of it, peering back over the edge of the eastward precipice before it ducked and disappeared. "Well, luck didn't let me down," muttered Sam. "But that was a near thing. Isn't it enough to have orcs by the thousand without that stinking villain coming nosing around? I wish he'd been shot." He sat down by Frodo and didn't rouse him, but he didn't dare to go to sleep himself. At last, when he felt his eyes closing and knew that his struggle to keep awake could not go on much longer, he wakened Frodo gently. "That Gollum's about again, I'm afraid, Mr. Frodo," he said. "Leastways, if it wasn't him, then there's two of him. I went away to find some water and spied him nosing round just as I turned back. I reckon it isn't safe for us both to sleep together, and begging your pardon, but I can't hold up my lids much longer." "Bless you, Sam," said Frodo. "Lie down and take your proper turn. But I'd rather have Gollum than orcs. At any rate, he won't give us away to them, not unless he's caught himself." "But he might do a bit of robbery and murder on his own," growled Sam. "Keep your eyes open, Mr. Frodo. There's a bottle full of water. Drink up. We can fill it again when we go on." With that, Sam plunged into sleep. Light was fading when he woke. Frodo sat propped against the rock behind, but he had fallen asleep. The water bottle was empty. There was no sign of Gollum. Mordor dark had returned, and the watchfires on the heights burned fierce and red when the hobbits set out again on the most dangerous stage of all their journey. They went first to the little spring, and then climbing warily up, they came to the road at the point where it swung east towards the Eisenmouth 20 miles away. It was not a broad road, and it had no wall or parapet along the edge, and as it ran on the sheer drop from its brink became deeper and deeper. The hobbits could hear no movements, and after listening for a while, they set off eastward at a steady pace.